You are listening to the Mid-Current Church Podcast. Today's message is week one of our series, Translation Please, A Simple Guide to Big Words. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and find us on Facebook and Instagram. And now, here is Pastor Sten Carlson with today's message.
My youngest son, who I also suspect is over there, hopefully not on chairs. My youngest son, he's now 4.5 years old. His name is Siggy, S-I-G-G-E, and named after him, kind of in his honor, some of our extended family have coined a new dialect, if you will, a new language that has become known among our family as Sigganese. Especially a year or so ago, he's coming along, but it was communication. Especially a year or so ago, he was known to communicate with just kind of strange and silly noises and expressions that didn't really make any sense. Or B, he would communicate with words that he knew full well what he was getting at, but no one else really understood. Erica and I really had no clue as to, you know, what he was getting at until we learned. So other people would have to come to us. For instance, if Siggy asked somebody for Yadu, this was a real thing, okay? If Siggy asked someone for Yadu, people would look back at him with a giant, you know, blank stare on their face. And so then they would have to look to me and Erica if we had any idea what he was talking about. And because we were his parents and because we're with him every day, all day, watching what he does and listening to what he says, we knew, right? We eventually knew what he was saying. We were able to let people know that when he asked for Yadu, he was asking for water. He wanted something to drink, Yadu, okay? That was it. We learned that along the way. Siggy had his own little way of speaking, and he just needed someone to translate for him. Friends, here's the truth. Sometimes the church, not just this church, but just the big C church, sometimes the church has their own little way of speaking. Sometimes that you know, as their words that they use that needs to be translated for everyday people trying to make sense of it all. In jest, sometimes this language that we use in church, it's even given a name too, right? Some people will call it Christianese, okay? It's all the big words and it's all the phrases that, you know, they just kind of get thrown around as if everybody knows exactly what they mean. Now, here's the deal. Some of us, we grew up in church and we heard some of these big words our whole life, and we don't really think much about it. Truthfully, they kind of sound familiar, so we just go along with it. Others of us were newer to church, or we're newer to faith. Maybe we're newer to hearing some of these words, or maybe, you know, at least talking about some of these words is a new thing for us. And yet, here's what I would say that we all have in common. I think for most of us, to some degree, right, no matter which end of the spectrum we are on, heard these words all the time or really just engaging with them for the first time, I would say that most of us, to some degree, are asking the very same question. What does that really mean anyway? Right, truthfully, when it comes to church and when it comes to the Bible and faith and following Jesus, tons of big and fancy words and ideas and concepts, they get thrown around that aren't necessarily all that common to everyday life, but they are very important to a life of faith. And so here's the deal. We recognize that some of these words that we use in church and faith is kind of like, what does that even mean anyway? And we don't want to leave you in the dark. Right? We don't want to leave you guessing as to what some of this stuff really means. We want to help fill in the blanks for you. And ultimately, what we want to do is we want to help make spiritual ideas and spiritual concepts accessible to everyday people just like you and just like me. And so that is the goal of our new message series that we are beginning today called Translation Please. Right? Well, we are going to help to make sense of some of the big words that you hear in church. The word that we're going to kick things off with today was actually a suggestion. I did some kind of, I did some crowdsourcing a little bit. So the word I want to begin with today was actually a suggestion from a buddy of mine. I texted him about a month ago to ask him if there were, any big words that, that he hears in church or in faith settings that make him kind of go like, huh? And his answer, he got right back to me. His answer was perfect. It's a very kind of word. It's a very kind of spiritual idea that I want to help make sense of for people just like you and for people just like me. And so here's the word that I want to talk about today. It's the word righteousness. Okay? You've probably heard it before, either so many times that you just stopped asking questions, or maybe you just heard it a time or two and you got plenty of questions every time you heard it. Maybe it doesn't matter who we are, maybe you're going like, yeah, what does that? I hear it used in church. Maybe you're going, what does that really mean anyway? I want to talk about this kind of strange sounding word. I love what my friend said about it as we went back and forth. He said that it kind of has a negative connotation to it these days, but he said, but it seems to be a good concept at its core. Okay, I couldn't agree more. It's a wonderful concept at its core, but for whatever reason, I don't know, maybe it's just the two of us, I don't know. It's a great concept at its core, but for some reason, it's not like necessarily the most popular word today, because I think of what maybe we think that it's really all about. I think sometimes we kind of hesitate, and I think sometimes we kind of balk at the word righteousness, because I think we get the wrong idea. We associate it too much with perfection. Right? Yeah, too many people, I think, this idea of righteousness is about, spiritual perfection, like angel status with like a little halo hanging over our head, right? Like goody two shoes, all right, or some kind of choir boy. And we're not sure we like that image in ourselves or in other people, and maybe we're not sure if we can really even attain such a status, nor do we, like people who act like they have already attained that status for themselves, right? We, in those instances, right, to people who are kind of like, I don't know, we would say they're self-righteous. These people are like thinking they're better than everyone else, and it's a negative connotation. It's self-righteous. In fact, I would venture to guess, I can't say for sure, but I would venture to guess that most non-Christians think this about Christians. They're so self-righteous. Okay, that's why I think this word gets kind of a bad rap. Even when we talk about, righteous anger is another time you hear, which isn't necessarily like a negative concept, but I still think it runs the risk of kind of putting a bad taste in people's mouth if righteous anger is misused for someone to get up on a soapbox and kind of lecture everybody else. I think it's easy for us to get the wrong idea. It's got kind of a bad connotation, but it seems like at its core, it's good. It's true, right? And I don't want anyone to get the idea that bad. I don't want to get righteousness. I don't want it to get a bad rap, because it really is good, as I said. But before it can get a good rap, I think we need to understand the full meaning of the word. I think we need to understand more of its implications for us and why we really should be. For those of us that are Jesus followers and really everybody else, why we should really be about this thing called righteousness. The word itself, if we just did a little quick survey here, the word itself is used all throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament. In the book of Genesis, Abraham followed God's instructions and God's call on his life to leave his homeland with very little instructions. And the Bible says that it was counted to him as righteousness. The book of Psalms says that the eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous. I'm interested in that. Okay. The book of Proverbs tells us that to do right and just, to do what is right and just, which is really righteousness, which we'll see in a second, it is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice. The New Testament book of James reminds us that the prayers of the righteous are powerful and effective. I want to pray powerful and effective prayers. Okay, I could go on and on and on, with a survey of this word, as variations of this one word show up over and over again in the Bible. Actually, more than like 500 times, I believe. It's everywhere. And now I recognize something as we kick this series off today. I recognize that that you may not be here this morning, just, you know, just itching, just crossing your fingers that I was going to, you know, talk about righteousness, you know, today or someday in church. I recognize that this topic may or may not be a topic of conversation around your dinner table or with your friends or with your small group. But I think when push comes to shove, I think somewhere deep down, I think most of us are showing up. If we're coming to church on Sunday morning on 4th of July weekend, I think we're showing up with some bit of us is saying, yeah, I mean, I want to live a life of righteousness. I think a lot of us would say, I talk about it, but I want to be a righteous man of God. I want to be a righteous woman of God. I'm interested in this deal, and that's good. I want that for you. I think our world would be a lot better place if you and I, if more of us were pursuing a life of righteousness. But I get it. It's kind of a big word, hard to spell sometimes, right? It's a big word, potentially a confusing topic as to what it's really all about. And so I want to help translate it for you in a sense, because I want to help make a significant spiritual truth, which this is. I want to make spiritual truth accessible to everyday people like you. So righteousness, if you start to pull it apart, it comes from the Greek word dikaios, which is translated literally as it means upright, right? It's a word that is getting at the right relationship. Every time this word is used, it's getting at this idea of the right relationship that we have with God. Other variations of the word refer to the condition, right? This is all about the relationship we have. They refer to the condition that is acceptable to God, or the way in which we attain kind of a state that is approved by God. It's righteousness, okay? Now here's if this is what it's really all about, the state of being accepted, if it's this idea of having a right relationship with God, I want to give you all a few sentence summary of how it is. I want to connect some dots here. I want to make sure we understand how it is that we have been made right with God, how we have been made acceptable in God's eyes. After humanity's first sin in the garden long ago, our broken relationship with God, it could only be made right again through the most strict adherence and obedience to the law. This was all the do's and the don'ts, and this was all the thou shall and the thou shall nots, right? That's the only way at that point, right, that you can make things right again. Therefore, this idea of righteousness, it was reserved only for those who were able to dot all their religious I's and cross all of their religious T's. But here's what God soon realized, that was a pretty tall task. Soon realized that was for you and I, for other people like us, that was a pretty heavy burden to carry. Very few people could dot enough I's and cross enough T's. Very few people could earn enough spiritual brownie points to repair the relationship with God that had been broken. Our best attempt, our, you know, grit our teeth and clench our fists attempts at being a good person, it wasn't going to be enough to pay the tab that our sin and that our brokenness had racked up. And this is the good news of Jesus for you and me and for all people. Because of this, God realized, man, this ain't going to work. And so God sent Jesus to make the payment for us. Right? Jesus filled the gap that existed between us and God and made it possible for us to once again have a right relationship with God, to be acceptable in his eyes once again. Listen to the way that Paul, one of the first ever church leaders, listen to the way he describes all this. I think this is going to be really helpful to our understanding of this word and this idea. Listen to the way that he describes all of this in a letter that he wrote to Jesus' followers in the city of Rome. He says this, "But now apart from the law, the righteousness of God has been made known." Okay? And this righteousness, he said, is given through faith in Jesus Christ to all who believe. A similar translation says that God has now shown us a way to be made right with him without keeping the law. That's righteousness. And it's God's, and it was given to us as a gift when we place our faith in Jesus. Mid-Current, here's what that says to me about this idea of righteousness. We got to understand this, because as if we don't, I think we're going to keep kind of getting the wrong idea. We're going to keep getting kind of a funny taste in our mouth about this whole idea of righteousness or of living a righteous life. So here's what I want to make clear when we take all of this in. Righteousness, if we listen to what Paul is writing here, righteousness is not a status that we reach. It's a status that we receive. You catch that? He says it's given through faith. It's the righteousness of God that was given to us through faith in Jesus Christ. It's not some kind of status that we reach. It's a status that we receive. It's a good and right and just and pleasing and perfect description of God that he passed on to us as a gift when we put our faith in Jesus and into what Jesus has done for us. It's not a level righteousness. It's not some level up here that we finally reach or some quality that we finally attain because of all of our hard work and because of all our good behavior and because of all of our spiritual elbow grease. It's not some ascent, some journey that we make up a spiritual ladder. I mean, that's a whole other deal completely. In fact, I remember a number of years ago when Eric and I watched the Leah Remini documentary on Scientology. Fascinating stuff. This is literally the essence of that organization I started to learn. You're like climbing the ladder, right? Doing enough and you know, taking enough classes and trying hard enough and exhibiting a good enough behavior to keep making your way up this ladder, this chart, this ascent. In fact, look at this quote from the founder of Scientology. He says this: the goal of Scientology is to make the individual capable of living a better life in his own estimation and playing a better game. Okay, now I get the world we live in and the culture. I get it. We live in a world and culture where success and competition and hard work are kind of celebrated and often the mark of successful people. So I can see how this kind of thinking, you know, would get our attention. Right? I want to make my life better. I'm going to climb to the top. But this is just not how this game works. This is the whole point. There is nothing. There's nothing that we can do on our own to climb high enough or to close the gap that we created between us and God so that we can stand before God in an acceptable condition. There's nothing we could do on our own to make that possible. And so Jesus did it for us. And that's what's so beautiful, and that's what's so magnificent about, you know, about the Christian faith, about Jesus following. You see, most of the major world religions, they center, if you really think about it, most of the major world religions, they center on man's search for God, right? Man's climb up the ladder to God. And what sets Christianity apart is that it hinges, the whole deal, it hinges not on man's search for God, not on our search for God, but on God's search for us. It was not our search for him. It was his desperate search and rescue mission for you and for me. It's not about how high up the ladder we can, that's not what righteousness is, our pursuit of it. It's not how high up the ladder that we can climb toward God. The amazing good news of the gospel is that God, through his one and only son, Jesus, came down that ladder for us. And that, friends, is ultimately the only reason that we can stand before God and be counted as what? Righteous. That's why I don't want us to get funny about it or hold this kind of idea at arm's length or to go on too much longer without knowing what it's really about. I don't want us to reject this, idea or, you know, because it seems just kind of like, you know, some religious game that we don't really know how to play, or because it's some, you know, seems like some religious game that some win and that some lose, right? I don't want us to just kind of discard the idea of some, you know, old stuffy religious word that, you know, we don't really know what it means, and we don't really talk about it much more, you know, anyway, these days. I don't want us to just kind of overlook it and set it aside. There might be a big word, yeah, that we don't use in everyday conversation as much anymore, but it's a foundational piece of the faith that we have, or the faith that maybe some of you might be exploring at the moment. So I don't want us to be in the dark about what it really means and why it's important to us. I don't want us to forget or overlook the idea that it is not about a status that we reach on our own, but about a status before God that we receive from God as a gift. So what does this really mean then? What does this actually mean for you and for me and for the lives that we are attempting to live faithfully and attempting to maybe live righteously every day? Does all this mean that we just get a pass on having to do good things? We just get a pass on following any of God's, you know, laws or God's guidelines for us. We just get a pass on having to live according to the ways that God, you know, has asked us to. I mean, if it's not something that we can attain for ourselves, right? If it's just what God did for us, if there's nothing we can do, then what's the point, right? I mean, why even try? Why pursue a good? Why pursue a faithful? Why pursue a righteous life in the first place? Does it even matter? It does. It very much does. For starters, the life that God has invited us to, I don't think it's just a life for the sake of eternity only. I think it is the path to life and life to the full that Jesus came to offer us here on earth. And second, though, I would say this. We absolutely should still pursue this idea of righteousness. Yes, it's not something that we can attain for ourselves. Right, it's a gift from God. It's not a status we reach. It's a status we receive from God. But we should still absolutely pursue it in our own life. But I just think we need to understand why. We need to put a different target on the wall and identify the appropriate end result for such an endeavor, okay? If righteousness is not a status we reach, but ultimately, some kind of quality of God's that he is giving to us, then the goal for you and I is this. Okay? The goal for you and I is not to reveal righteousness in us. That's not why we do the hard work of being faithful in our lives, right? We don't work to reveal a righteousness in us, but to reflect this righteousness of God's. That's why the lives we live still matters. That's why we can't say, boom, God's taking care of it, I'm off the hook. No. We still pursue all of this stuff. We just have to understand why we're doing it. And the goal, once again, it's not that we would reveal righteousness in us, but that we would reflect this righteousness that is God. It's not, look what I did. It's not, look how amazing I am. It's look how truly amazing God is. Look what he has done. Look what he did for me. It is his very nature that is given to us as a gift that we get to reflect for others to see wherever we go. So we still pursue righteousness, and we still pursue a faithful and an obedient life, yeah. We still love God, and we still love others fiercely. We still live radical lives of purity and of honesty and of integrity and of generosity. We still work hard in our everyday life to put God first in all things, even when the rest of the world puts God second, third, fourth, or fifth, or maybe even not even on the list. We still honor our parents. We still guard our tongues from any unwholesome speech. We still guard our hearts against jealousy and against lust and against hate. We still follow and obey the instructions that God has laid out for us to live. We still pursue this thing called righteousness, but with a slightly different goal in mind, a slightly different target on the wall, not to reveal some buried quality in us, but to reflect this very quality of a kind, loving, merciful, gracious God. Simply put, when I think about this, simply put, I think we're intended to be mirrors. not monitors of this whole deal. We're intended to be mirrors, not monitors. You remember hall monitors from school, right? Out patrolling the hallways, evaluating whether or not everyone was, you know, doing what they were supposed to do, or, you know, where they're at, where they were supposed to be, right? I don't remember this being an incredibly popular bunch. And friends, I'm not sure that that's our best play, right? Out there as monitors, comparing and measuring and monitoring ours and the rest of the world's goodness. Certainly, don't misunderstand me, certainly as Jesus followers, there is absolutely a time and a place to hold people accountable and to hold people to the standards that God has set for us. But day in and day out, it seems to me like our best play is to just be a mirror, doing everything we can to reflect God's goodness as often as we can. The end result, I mean, it might be the same, but the motivation is different, and I think the motive matters. Might be the same destination, but the pathway there is different, and I think it's a pathway that's far more effective and far more meaningful and far more contagious. To not try to reveal something in us, some hidden treasure in there, but just to reflect who God is and how good he has been to us. So as I wrap all of this up here, let me just ask you a question, Midcurrent. How will you, how could you live a life every day that reflects the righteousness of God? It is an amazing gift. It's not something we reach. It's a status that we receive, but that doesn't mean we just sit on our hands and say, whew. How will you live a life every day that reflects the righteousness of God that has been given to you? How will you reflect it? How will you be a mirror of it in your marriage, in significant relationships in your life? How will you be a mirror of it to your kids? How will you reflect it at work or in the conference room or in the boardroom or around the water cooler? How will you reflect God's goodness with your customers or your clients or your colleagues, students? How will you reflect God's goodness and God's righteousness in your classrooms and in your hallways at school this fall? See, I think the world around us is watching, and I think they're listening to our claims, to the claims of Jesus followers that hey, we've got a hold of something, that they're listening to us say that we think we got this right, that we've got some things together and we've got a few things figured out. And I think how we live our lives every day is our everyday opportunity to inform them of why indeed that is the case and how the same thing is truly possible for them. So then, you and I, right, as a church, right, going out into this community, out into this world, let's be mirrors this day, in this week, in this month, in this year, so that the righteousness of God would be made known to the world. Let me pray. God, thanks so much for this morning that we have, God. We once again give you thanks for what it is we celebrate. Freedom in this place that we live, God, but also freedom that you have made possible for us through Jesus, God. Freedom from the grip that death and sin and darkness has over us, God. I pray that because of that good news, God, because of the fact that Jesus came here to conquer death for us, I pray that we would put faith in him in a way that means we receive an amazing gift from you. God, that we would be truly made right in your eyes because of the faith that we place in your Son, Jesus Christ. God, we want to be about this thing called righteousness. It's maybe a funny or a silly sounding word, and we maybe don't talk about it or use it in everyday conversation, God, but it's central to our life. So God, help us to pursue this idea of righteousness, not so that we might reveal something in ourselves, but God, we might reflect something great to this world about who you are and about the gift that you offer to each of us. God, help us to reflect well everywhere we go and everything we do who you are. It's in your Son's name that we pray here today. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this week's message from Midcurrent Church. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Midcurrent Church is located at 200 First Street in downtown Hudson, Wisconsin. Be sure to join us on Sunday mornings both online and in person at 9 and 10:30 a.m.